welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
We're going to talk about genetic testing. You picked a good poem, and we'll get to that shortly. It was from the BMJ. Genetic testing can have a number of different purposes. It can be diagnostic, or it can be predictive. It can be done at different times in a person's life, and at those times have different purposes. For example, you can have pre-implantation testing, prenatal testing, newborn testing, testing at birth, testing to determine carrier status, and testing for predictive purposes. Diagnostic testing, increasingly common, it can be used now for, I think the last time I saw was like 2,700 different conditions. Most of these are very rare birds, and most of them manifest either at birth or very shortly after birth. But some, like Huntington's disease, don't come to clinical attention until much later in life, at which point genetic testing might be appropriate as well. So a 40-year-old woman who's just been diagnosed with breast cancer may want to use diagnostic testing in yet another way. She may opt for full sequence analysis of her BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes so that she can be allowed to make surgical decisions. So that would be a use of diagnostic testing. When we move to predictive testing, it's a method of risk assessment for people that don't have any clinical symptoms but may be at risk for developing them due to some sort of a genetic component. The value of a predictive test is influenced by the penetrance of the gene and whether there's some sort of intervention that you can take to make a difference. Sometimes it may just be knowing that you've got the gene, but other times, you know, more frequent colonoscopies or yada 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 can be very helpful. And then there's carrier testing for things like Tay-Sachs disease, where you want to know not necessarily if you're at risk, but do you have a gene that if you pair with a partner and they have the gene might cause problems in an offspring. The last point I want to make is that the genetic testing isn't without costs. There are risks, obviously risks of false positives and false negatives, but also psychological issues because of the nature of the tests and what it can mean. There's also issues with genetic discrimination. Listeners may know that in 2008, the federal government passed a rule that we call GINA, stands for Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. It prevents insurance companies that deal in health insurance and employers with more than 15 employees from discriminating against people who have a positive genetic predisposition for disease. There are two exceptions to this. One is it does not apply to long-term health care, to life insurance, to disability insurance, etc. It only applies to health insurance. And if you're employed by if your employer employs fewer than 15 people, or if you work for the federal government in Indian Health Services or the VA or you belong to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, it also does not protect you. With all of that as background on genetic testing, the article that you found in BMJ, published 2016, volume 352, and it's got another one of these web links, it's I-1102, it asks a very important clinical question, which is, does genetic testing for disease risk motivate people to change their behavior? So if you know you've got a risk factor for breast cancer, colon cancer, or something like that, is it a motivator to engage in different behaviors? Mark, what did they find?
Well, people are rational. Of course it is, Mike. I don't even know why they bothered to do this study, but okay, we'll talk about it anyway. They had 18 studies that they found, and they were all randomized or quasi-randomized kind of trials where these were adults who were getting some sort of personalized DNA-based risk estimates for some condition where there was the possibility that a behavior change might reduce their risk. So less things like breast cancer, more things like smoking and lung cancer. So if you have an increased risk of lung cancer, maybe you want to quit smoking. Or if you have an increased risk of melanoma, maybe you'd start wearing a hat and staying out of the sun. Overall, the studies were consistent and homogeneous. Overall, communicating this risk didn't change behavior. That's what they found. Telling smokers that their increased risk of lung cancer didn't get them to quit smoking, for example. Patients at risk for developing diabetes or obesity or cardiovascular disease, hypertension, Alzheimer's, didn't change their diet or physical activity. Patients at especially high risk for alcohol use disorder didn't change their drinking. Generally, the studies were of low quality, but if anything, that would usually favor the intervention. And, they were fairly small studies, so maybe they were too small to detect a difference. Yet more evidence that human beings are not necessarily rational beings.
It's hard to tell, right, because patients aren't always truthful, and they're a little bit embarrassed, and you know, they know what they're supposed to do. It rarely is for lack of understanding. Oh, I didn't I didn't know you were telling me that I should stop smoking, doctor. But is it denial, or is it just that they get so much enjoyment out of some of these lifestyle activities, the drinking, the smoking, the being overweight, which means eating, that it isn't worth it to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think in most cases, these patients, know that they're at risk for lung cancer already. And, you know, that there's some slightly greater increased risk because of their genes. I'm not sure that actually, is enough to motivate them. And yeah, absolutely, some people get a lot of enjoyment out of their diet or their lack of physical activity or their alcohol use. And knowing that, and they know that these things are not good for them. They know they should eat a good diet and exercise and, avoid excessive alcohol. But if they like those things, I don't know that this little extra piece of information is like, you're at even greater than average risk is enough. You know, I mean, the 23andMe and things like that, they're fun for figuring out whether you are Italian or Serbo-Croatian, or how much, American Indian is there in your background or whatever. But I don't think they're, at this point, they're really useful tools for lifestyle changes. Maybe there are ways to incorporate these into a more comprehensive kind of education intervention that might have some greater benefit. But just throwing this information at patients doesn't seem to help them.
I was just with a group of residents last week who were complaining that it just doesn't work, that we spend all this time in role-playing and figuring out how to engage in motivational interviewing, and, we haven't seen any difference in what our patients are doing or whether they're smoking or overweight or drinking or whatever it is.
Yeah, and, there have been fairly good studies of motivational interviewing for particularly smoking, I'm familiar with, and it does seem to be effective, but a lot of times those effects aren't necessarily something you're going to see on a day-to-day basis. You're not going to walk out of every encounter thinking, yep, I fixed that patient, they're never going to smoke again. Mm. It's one of those things. Over time, you may increase the absolute increase of, getting people to quit smoking might go from 4% to 8%, which is huge. But it's not something you might notice on a day-to-day basis.
Right. Thanks, Mark. Very interesting. We will talk with you again in a week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.